Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 42 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my lovely hostess, Erin Paulette. How you doing, Erin?
I have the strangest hankering for duck vagina about now.
I'm going to have to figure out a way to package up that discussion for human consumption.
So for people who are obviously confused as to what's going on, how did we get started? You were talking about going to a Ron White concert.
Yes, on last week I went to see Ron White when he was here in Massachusetts, and my wife and I have been a huge fan of him for ages, and we've been making it. Comedy tours have been our regular date night sort of activity, is we'll find someone who's coming in, and so we've seen a bunch of good people in the last couple of years, and got a chance to go see Ron White. And so I'm in Medford, Massachusetts. There's a theater there, not as nice as some of the ones in Boston, but boy, it's a nice venue to go to without having to deal with all the nonsense that Boston is. Saw Ron White. He was absolutely hilarious. I mentioned it to Ryan Machad from Handgun Radio, and he said, in Massachusetts, did they let him smoke and drink on stage? And I said, I don't know if they let him smoke and drink on stage, but he sure did.
Get to the point, duck boy.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Him walking out smoking a cigar on stage in Massachusetts, where smoking indoors is completely illegal. I think it's legal. You can smoke in your own home, but don't actually. I have several neighbors who are smokers who are all out on their porches in horrible weather smoking cigarettes.
Okay, you suck at telling the story. I am overriding you. Okay, so before the show, we were talking, and I'm not really sure how we got on the topic of the strange foods, but you like eating strange foods. Mm-hmm. You started off with Scrapple, which is not that uncommon. Mm-hmm. Then you started talking about walkie-talkies, which are the head and feet of chickens. That's something you want to try.
Yes.
And you mentioned fish heads, and then I brought up the little tidbit about how if you're dehydrated at sea and you eat the eye of the fish, it's not exactly fresh water, but it is not salt water, and you could get some hydration that way. And it just sort of spiraled into the really, really weird stuff that can be eaten. And because I know that Chinese people and probably other Asian cultures enjoy eating the genitals of many different animals, and because I know Weird is obsessed with ducks, I made a joke about, well, you know, has he ever eaten a duck vagina? Because the jokes just make themselves. And because of that, and then something Ron White had said, he thought this was, well,
I thought he was putting us on. Ron White did a bit about eating duck vagina tacos in Beverly Hills. And I thought for sure that the duck vagina was just there for shock value. And to hear that, and then Erin posted a bunch of links, and which maybe I'll put those in the show notes if I'm not feeling charitable.
and so we were talking about this, and Weird was just aghast that this was a thing. And then in Discord, Connie Elliott, who is half Vietnamese, just popped up to say hello and wish us all a happy Tet. And I was like, oh, goody. Hey, Connie, tap, 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 tap. Can you join us in the channel for like 5 minutes? And I asked her, I mean, you know, she's a friend, so I don't have to worry about being rude. But it was that whole, hey, Connie, you're from a Vietnamese family. Tell us about the weird stuff you've eaten off of an animal. And she said that she hadn't eaten a duck vagina, but she has eaten pig uterus before. And she gave us just this wonderful, long culinary digression that is too good just to fit into a blooper reel, we think.
Yeah, so I'll be packaging that up at a later date. We'll see. I've got a blooper reel that I need to do too. And also, this will be a good point to transition in the fact that saying like, and I gotta see when I could fit it in, because I'm heading off to Florida this weekend when you are hearing this, I'm already gone. And so next week, the regularly scheduled show will be dark. We'll be taking a week off, and then we will return back to our regular shenanigans after that. And hopefully I'll get a chance to get together with you, Aaron. We'll see. I'm gonna try really hard to make it happen, but we'll see about how tight things are gonna be for our vacation when we're in Orlando.
Right, especially because I will be leaving middle of next week to attend Life, the Universe, and Everything in Utah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the scheduling is probably going to be pretty tight.
Yes,
tight like a duck's vagina. Ba-doom-pa-tsh. Blooper reel.
Oh, man. No, I'm keeping that for the regular show. That's too good. And on topic. The blooper reel is for when we go vastly off topic.
I just wonder at what point the show goes from PG to PG-13 to R just by saying the word vagina.
It is a medical term, and we were talking about the body parts of animals, and we are doing nothing to them but eating them from nutrition. So therefore, no, that's not against the rules. But again, rules are crazy.
I've also been drinking. I'm not drunk, but I'm feeling no pain.
My daughter is difficult, so I drink in a glass with a 308 bullet in it.
Oh, is that one of the Ben Shot glasses from Lucky Gunner?
No, this is from a company called Lucky Shot, and I believe they heat up the glass and press.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Lucky Gunner sent me a set of matching. No, it wasn't shot glasses. Mine were tumblers. Yeah, a couple of Christmases ago.
Yeah, this is a tumbler. Is Lucky Gunner part of Lucky Shot? I didn't know that they were.
Well, no. What they probably, this is going to sound like bragging, but Lucky Gunner sends me presents for Christmas.
Yes.
And one of the presents I got from them, I mean, I assume they just bought a massive amount of these shot glasses with 308, and they sent them out for Christmas presents. I mean, I don't know that they're necessarily partnered. I thought they just bought them.
Yep.
And I was curious if you got them at the same Christmas as I did, if you got them from our friend Anthony.
No, I got them from this Christmas from my aunt. She saw it, and she's like, I had to get this for you.
Well, now I sound all completely pretentious.
No, you're just better than me because you are. I know my position in this pecking order.
All right, so we have a very packed show, and Weird kind of threw to me for a last-minute topic. And this is just more of a meditation, if you will. It's not a full sermon. It's just, I had a thought. Let us ponder it together. Now, I've got to give you a little bit of a backstory. I mentioned several months back that I wanted to push forward a bill in the Florida legislature whereby a concealed carrier who remained sober could carry in a bar. And I called this the Designated Defender Initiative. And I have been working with Eric Friday of Florida Carry in order to try and make this happen. And I haven't heard from him for quite some time. He's a very busy man. He does other things than work for Florida Carry. I mean, he is a lawyer full time. But I heard back from him. He said that the Senate president in the Florida legislature is assigning all gun bills to die in the Criminal Justice Committee, where the bought and paid for by Moms Demand Action person, Flores, I don't remember her first name.
She doesn't need one.
In case you remember this from however long ago, Flores came in as being somewhat pro-Second Amendment, and at the last minute she flipped and was all about sensible gun legislation. I believe in the message of Moms Demand Action paid for by Bloomberg.
And doing photo ops with Moms Demand Action. So,
right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Total flip.
And so because of this, no pro-gun bills are being pushed by anyone here in Florida. A few individuals are trying, but Florida Carry, NRA, no one's trying that yet. And right now, the wisdom is that some post-session backlash will help for next session, but at this point, we don't think anything's really going to happen until 2021. And this got me to thinking. And my meditation here is that politics is generational warfare. Let me explain what I mean by that. Now, I am not a patient person. I need things to happen right away, or I am not happy. But I guess I'm old enough now that I can see the way things are set up. Stuff is not likely to change for quite some time, and we just have to wait. And in some cases, we have to wait for people to die. And this is what got me thinking. And so here is an analogy. No, actually, this is an example. So if you were cognizant of politics back in the 80s and 90s, you remember when gay marriage was the thing. When gay people wanted to get married, and they couldn't because marriage was between a man and a woman, and there were lots of bills, lots of protests, and nothing really got done. And then something interesting happened over the next 20 years. Gay marriage, marriage equality, whatever you want to call it, all of these things just started happening, and it eventually culminated in a Supreme Court decision that said all states across the country have to recognize marriages, and it doesn't matter as long as they are two consenting adults. Well, what's the difference? Well, the difference was 20 years. Mm-hmm. Because when the kerfuffle was going on in the 80s, you know, all the voters, they were saying, no, we're not going to have this happen. And they fought it and they won. But their kids were aware of it and they were watching and they went, that's not fair. And as those kids grew into voting age, and then as a lot of the very stodgy people died, you saw a shift in the political spectrum. And these days, gay marriage is just not a big deal anymore. And I think that's how politics is being waged these days. It is generational warfare. If we want something now, we may not get it now, but if we put up a big stink and we fight the big fight, even if we are defeated, well, it's a lot like arguing on the internet. You aren't going to convince the person that you're arguing with, but maybe you will convince the people watching. And so the tactic here is we may lose now, but hopefully in 10 to 20 years, as the people who are entrenched in opposing positions die out and new people come in, hopefully we will have convinced the new people to vote the way we want. And we are seeing that in both good and bad ways. As I say this, South Dakota has become the 14th constitutional carry state.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
I didn't hear that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was the first bill signed by their new governor. It just happened like, I don't know, I'm not sure if it was today or yesterday, but it was in the past few days. It's very, very recent. And constitutional carry is something that would have been unheard of 20 years ago.
Oh, 20 years ago, I mean, that was actually the analogy I was going to bring up as my response as to tie it into guns is that, I mean, at that exact same time frame you gave, the 80s and early 90s, concealed carry more or less was illegal in the United States. I mean, it was illegal in my home state of Maine, though, again, it was super duper duper rare. At least, I mean, I'm from Portland, so in the Portland area, at least it was super duper rare. You didn't hear much about people concealed carrying, though I gotta imagine open carry has always been legal in Maine. So either way, concealed carry was just a very, very odd thing. It was not something a normal person did. And then over the course of the years, I mean, it took the federal assault weapons ban to really light a fire under people's butts to start pushing these concealed carry laws. And once they started pushing it, people started seeing, well, geez, you know, this state went from, you know, concealed carry to his, like, Alaska over the course of like something from like the late 80s to like the mid 90s went from concealed carry was completely illegal to concealed carry was legal with a permit to concealed carry was legal, no permit required. And again, as we've seen with everybody, I mean, South Dakota is not going to have any problems now that they've suddenly said that the permit isn't necessary. And it just, it takes a little bit of time to get people used to, because people are always concerned when they see something that's different, that it's suddenly a great social experiment.
Well, I just remember, I believe it was 1987 when Florida passed concealed carry. And I'm not going to say we were the first state, but we were one of the first.
You were definitely one of the first. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a big deal. And I've mentioned before how people were talking about Wild West, blood in the streets, shooting over parking spaces, which didn't happen. But that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And here we are over 20 years later. And, okay, in effect, we don't have concealed carry nationwide. But at least in theory, the bills are on the books. Every state has the capacity for concealed carry.
And the only ones that aren't are off the books for concealed carry are states like Massachusetts here, where in the 80s and 90s, concealed carry was absolutely legal, but it was through this Byzantine mother may I permission slip set, you know, system. And so the states where if you happen to be relocated for your job there and then you go and apply for your concealed carry permit and they tell you to go pound sand, that was a place where it was concealed carry was legal but not permitted, if I may. It was May issue before the 1990s concealed carry rush. Everything after that has been shall issue. If you can go into a gun shop and buy a gun, and maybe you've had to go through a training course, but you can pass a very simple training course, you can conceal carry. You're all set.
Well, really what I was thinking of was Hawaii, where mm-hmm. they have concealed carry permits, but in effect, no one gets them. I mean, you have to be really connected. Just from what I've heard, it's worse than Jersey. It might be right up there with New York City, where mm-hmm. it's a political favor yep. and nothing else.
Yeah, I think they've got like under 200 carry permits in the entire state of Hawaii.
And so unless you have anything to add on this, this is just sort of where my brain has gone. I don't have a punchline, that's the way it is. It's not an inspirational message. It's just I have noticed this, and I think that we must, unfortunately, just take the long view and realize that we are waging a war, a battle, and we will not see the fruits of this for another generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. It's also just how it's done. It's the, concealed carry reciprocity. That's been ever since like I started getting into gun politics. Every year, somebody's popped up a concealed carry reciprocity bill. But when I first got into gun politics, that was on the same lines as every year somebody pops up a let's get rid of presidential term limits. And it quickly dies in committee. You're a crazy person. No, that's a foolish thing to do. And that was concealed carry reciprocity. And then next thing you know, it's starting to get voted on. It's starting to get seen. It is gaining momentum. It's not gaining momentum fast enough for me as well. I understand your frustration, Aaron, because it is my frustration as well. And I think everyone listening to it has the same frustration. But by it coming up again and again while we're there beating the drums and working the streets and winning hearts and minds, that is how you win in our political system. We talk a lot about gun safety all the time, be it the NRA safety rules or Jeff Cooper's 4 rules of gun safety. We drill it into people who handle firearms to be safe because accidents can be severe. But if you're carrying a gun, chances are you're also carrying a knife, and we don't talk about knife safety nearly as much. Oddball's going to change that right now.
Welcome to Oddball's Corner Pocket. Listener Xander Opal asked on the ACP Facebook page about knife safety. He noted that we're constantly talking about safe firearms handling, but he's rarely seen talk about safe knife handling. So let's talk about that for a bit. I think that the most important bit of safe knife handling is always cut away from you. I would add to this that you should, if at all possible, keep the edge pointed away from you as well. Think of the edge like the muzzle of the gun. It's the dangerous bit and doesn't really care what's in its way. This is especially true when it comes to cutting through tough material. Once that blade cuts through or slips off the material, it's going to jump a good bit before you can stop your arm. That leads me nicely to the next safety concern. Keep your knives sharp. I think I've mentioned a few times in the past that a sharp knife is a happy knife. Beyond it just being a better experience to use a sharp knife, it's actually safer. The less effort needed to cut through something means that you can have more control. That means less slipping, etc., and therefore less chance of you cutting something you don't mean to, like, for example, your hand. Following these two safety tips would have stopped many folks from experiencing that condition that was plaguing the country in 2017, avocado hand. For those that don't know, avocado hand is a term that was created to describe a rash of hand injuries during the recent avocado craze. Avocados have a very tough skin and a very soft flesh. This can lead to a lot of knife slippage when the knife does get through that skin. On top of that, a popular way to remove the pit of the fruit is to impale it with the knife and twist. Many folks have seen professional chefs do this quickly and easily while holding the fruit in their hand. What they don't grasp is that a professional chef has had a lot of practice and is very aware of the condition of their tools, aka the knife, and what they are capable of. Folks also seriously misjudge just how much force it takes to cut into that pit and chop all the way through the pit, the fruit, and into their hand. What's worse is that I've seen some pictures where the person decided to stab the pit. Let that sink in. They decided that the best method was to stab at their hand with great force. Yeah, so if you're not a professional chef, here's a tip. You can use the exact same method, but on a cutting board and keeping your hand out of the way. Hopefully you have one of those in your kitchen. My next tip is to always keep a knife closed or sheathed when not in use. This one should be fairly self-explanatory. Similarly, if you need to walk with a knife that doesn't close or have a sheath, say a kitchen knife, hold it in a safe direction. The standard safe direction is generally considered tip down with the edge behind you, although this isn't always the most safe position. For example, if you have an excited dog that thinks it might be able to steal some bacon, you might want to hold it high and pointing up. Which goes to the next safety tip. Make sure you know what's around you. Specifically, what's in the path of the blade if the knife should slip. It would suck to have the knife go through that apple you're cutting and into your buddy's arm because they're too close. Remember to keep your knife clean and well maintained. If there are any screws on your knife, make sure that those remain tight and secured. If it's a folding knife, make sure that there's not an excessive amount of play in the blade, and a fixed blade shouldn't move around at all. If there is, it's time to either repair the knife or replace it. Same thing goes if your folder is a lock blade and the locking mechanism either no longer works or doesn't reliably engage. Never grab the edge of your knife. It's okay to hold onto the spine of the knife with a pinch grip for delicate work, but the edge is the nasty cutty bit, and you should keep those delicate fingers away. Speaking of the nasty cutty bit, and keeping your fingers away, be aware of where the edge is when you're sheathing and unsheathing a knife, especially with large knives or swords. I've seen people get cut rather badly because they weren't mindful of where the edge was traveling as it was leaving the sheath. Similarly, you should never have your hand wrapped all the way around a sheath of a knife with a recurve, like a kukri, when unsheathing it. I've seen pictures of people that did and were unfortunate enough to have the knife cut through the sheath as they were pulling it out and cut their hand. Let's just say those pictures are not appropriate to share while folks are eating. One that I know is going to cause arguments is make sure you're using the right tool for the job. You wouldn't expect a fillet knife to work well as a woodcarver, and you wouldn't want to do delicate work with a meat cleaver. Not only are you making the job more difficult than it needs to be, it could possibly cause dangerous situations. If you're batoning with a knife that isn't built to handle that kind of shock, there's a decent chance that you'll break it. If you're really unfortunate, the blade might go flying off. Similarly, unless you have a knife that is specifically designed to handle those tasks, only use a knife for cutting. Especially if that knife has a sharp point on it, it's not designed to stand up to the abuse of using it as a pry bar, hammer, etc. Sorry, Weird, if you find yourself needing to pry things out a lot, then maybe you should get a pocket-sized pry tool. Lastly, let falling knives fall. Remember that a good portion of the knife is dangerous to grab. It's better to just let it fall and pick it up off the ground. This got hammered home to me when I once dropped a knife in the kitchen and it ended up sticking tip down into the hardwood floor. I was pretty happy that I had jumped back to get my foot out of the way. Here's a bonus tip. It's considered proper etiquette to hand a knife to someone handle first, preferably while closed or sheathed. Of course, if you do have to handle the blade, remember to hold on to the spine, not the edge. Hope that helps. If I missed anything, I'd love for you guys to chime in on the ACP Facebook group, and I love getting suggestions for future segments. As always, you can read more of my thoughts on GunsCarsTech.com. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions for future segments, feel free to shoot me an email at GunsCarsTech.com, or you can always yell at me on the Assorted Calibers podcast Facebook page. Until next time, have a good one.
So this segment, I'm listening to it, and he's making good points, and I'm going, hey, but he hasn't mentioned. And he keeps going, and I'm going, oh, I'm going to be able to mention something. Oddball missed this thing. I'm going to get to scoop him. And right at the end, he says, don't try to catch a dropped knife. And I was just, oh, man, I was going to do that. So congratulations, Oddball. You completely teased me. Thought I was going to score points on you, and I didn't.
And yeah, his line about my daughter is very excited about knives and cooking and all that, and she will ask, "Oh, can I cut that up, Daddy? Can I cut that up?" And most of the time, like ever since she was like, I think she was like 3 when I first let her handle like one of my actual kitchen knives, and she's actually been really good. Like, I've been willing to accept a little cut here and there because, Lord knows, I've got scars all over my hands, but she'll ever so often say, hey, Daddy, can I cut up an avocado? Or, hey, Daddy, can I cut up a mango? And I'm like, nope. Because I say, you know, avocados, mangoes, and bagels will send you to the ER.
Okay, I understand the avocado. I can get the bagel. But mangoes?
Oh, yeah. Mangoes are actually by far the most tricky thing that I cut up on a regular basis. I love mangoes because what you do is, at least how I cut up a mango is, so a mango, if you haven't eaten one, it's got a thick leathery skin on it, and you got to wait for it to get wrinkly before it's nice and sweet. So the skin, I've heard you can eat the skin. I don't want to, especially after it's nice and ripe. It doesn't look good. So the first thing I do is I peel it with a veggie peeler. So now you've got a soft, slimy, very slippery fruit that has a massive pit in the middle of it. And so then you've got to cut the flesh away from the pit. And so holding onto this slippery thing as you're cutting through the flesh, and the pit is very hard and woody, and the flesh should be very soft and almost buttery. And so just those textures, it's very similar to an avocado in that sense, except for with an avocado, you're holding onto that nice leathery skin that you get a good grip on. So it's like cutting an avocado, but with no grip.
Huh.
And so I'm always worried that the knife is going to, you know, is going to slip. My hand is going to slip and the knife is going to cut my hand. And because of that, I have cut myself cutting a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. Never once have I cut myself while cutting a mango because I am horrified the whole time while I'm doing it. And they're worth it because they're delicious.
Okay, then. I am enlightened. Are you a gun cleaning virgin? If so, worry no more. David is here to gently open your mind to this new experience by recommending a series of accessories that will help you keep your gun clean, lubed, and ready to bang.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. Oddball's segment on cleaning and rust removal with knives suggested the topic for today's segment. I'm sure many of our listeners, especially those with military service, are already very familiar with cleaning firearms. Hopefully, in this segment, I'll be able to add to your knowledge and suggest some alternative techniques or materials. Before I get into the supplies and processes for cleaning, I'd like to add the following caution. Do not have any live ammunition in the cleaning area. Confirm this before you start, and make it a regular habit whenever you perform firearm maintenance. Another thing to keep in mind is that while the procedure is similar, the solvents used for cleaning smokeless powder guns are generally not effective when cleaning those that use black powder. For cleaning black powder firearms, you'll generally need a water-based solvent or, at a minimum, a good quantity of hot or even boiling water. A properly cleaned and maintained firearm generally operates more reliably and lasts longer than one that isn't properly cared for. As the saying goes, guns only have two enemies, rust and politicians. Cleaning also gives you the opportunity to notice any unusual wear on bearing surfaces or springs. The basic tools necessary for cleaning a firearm are a cleaning rod, patch holder and or jag, bore brush, cleaning brush, patches, a cleaning rag, solvent, and lubricant. There is an impressive variety available in all these different components. For example, in patch holders alone, there are a number of different options. Everything from a simple loop that will work in a number of calibers to patch jags sized to a particular bore diameter. These patch holders also come in both metal and plastic. Brushes are another area of great variety. You can select from nylon or bronze bristles, or a stainless steel loop style called a tornado brush. There are pros and cons to each of these types. While nylon brushes are not as aggressive as the others, they can be used with solvents designed to remove brass fouling. This chemical would damage a bronze brush if they were used together. Bronze brushes, in addition to being more aggressive, also tend to last longer before needing replacement. The stainless steel loop style brush is even better at removing bore fouling without presenting any sharp ends that could scratch the barrel. However, they're not as effective as getting into the corners of the rifling as the bristle brush style. Brushes are caliber specific, and it's important to use the correct size for your barrel. Also remember that bore brushes are considered consumables and need to be replaced when they show signs of wear. Cleaning rods are another area of potential confusion, as they come in brass, aluminum, steel, and fiberglass. Cleaning rods made of metal also come in coated or uncoated, as well as segmented and one piece. The concern with rods made of softer materials is that fragments can become embedded in them, potentially causing scratches to the barrel. The main issue with segmented rods is that the joins often do not perfectly line up and can present an edge to the bore. However, one-piece rods, in addition to being more challenging to store, are generally more expensive than the segmented style, sometimes significantly so. Something else to consider with longer cleaning rods, meaning longer than necessary to reach the end of the barrel, is that they can flex in the barrel and rub, potentially causing damaging to the rifling. Another tool you may hear about is called a bore snake. This product consists of a caliber-specific length of material with embedded bronze bristles. In use, it's treated with solvent, the weighted end is dropped down the barrel, and then the body is pulled through. This combines the function of both patch and brush at the same time. While this can be useful for a quick cleaning at the range or in the field, it performs a much less thorough job than the dedicated individual tools. Patches should also be properly sized to the barrel. The best patch material is generally cotton, either light flannel or t-shirt style weave. You can buy pre-made patches or cut your own out of old shirts. When buying or making patches for smaller caliber barrels, generally anything 30 caliber or less, proper size and shape is of even greater importance. With any barrel, a patch that's too large can become wedged while being pushed through the bore. This situation is of greater likelihood in smaller caliber barrels. I'll talk more about this when I discuss cleaning procedures. Solvents are another area that can cause information overload. Everyone has their favorite as well as a product they dislike for whatever reason. Among the commercial solvents I've used are Ballistol, LSA, CLP, Frog Lube, Hoppies, Outers, Sweet 762, and Shooter's Choice. I've also used World War II Korean War vintage U.S. military surplus bore solvent. They all work reasonably well, but as usual, they have their pros and cons. As I mentioned earlier, solvents used in cleaning black powder guns are generally not the same as those used to clean smokeless powder firearms. Of the solvents available for cleaning black powder firearms, I only have personal experience with Ballistol. As far as I'm aware, it's one of the few that can be used on both black powder and smokeless powder guns. I also know a number of black powder shooters who mix their own cleaning solvents using a wide variety of ingredients. Some of these recipes are closely held secrets, while others are shared on shooting and handloading websites and discussion boards. One of the considerations when choosing a solvent is the type of projectiles you shoot. If you're only using lead bullets, your requirements will be different than if you're shooting metal jacketed or plated bullets. For the latter, you will eventually need a solvent to remove the jacket fouling from your barrel. Of the various solvents I've used over the years, CLP has become my go-to for maintaining my firearms. Other than copper fouling, it does a reasonably good job of removing powder residue, old grease and oil, dirt, and general grime. In addition, it acts as a lubricant and, according to the literature, leaves a protective coating on the metal. For copper fouling, I tend to rely on Sweets 762. It just works. Am I claiming that either one of these is the be-all, end-all of cleaning fluids? Absolutely not. All I'm saying is they work well for me. Speaking of lubricants, depending on your firearm, you're probably going to need both oil and grease. This section will provide plenty of opportunities for inappropriate biological references. In regards to oils, both wet and dry lubricants are available, and both have their place in your cleaning kit. Grease, on the other hand, is less frequently used on firearms than it used to be, unless you have an M1 Garand where certain parts do require a small dab of grease. The biggest difference between the two is their viscosity. Oils tend to be less viscous while grease is more so. In other words, oil has a more liquid texture while grease has a more gooey or creamy texture. Your climate and intended use will also have more effect on the type and quantity of gun lubricant applied than most other considerations. For example, people who live in a hot and dry climate like Arizona are likely better off using a dry lubricant as a liquid will attract grit and then act as an abrasive. For winter in northern states, a light coating of oil is all that's recommended as oil thickens in the cold and may affect function. This is what the dry lubricants were actually originally designed for. In a hot and humid climate, a heavier application of oil may be needed as the higher temperature causes the oil to thin while the humidity increases the possibility of rust. This can also be a good place for some of the lighter grease options. As always, when in doubt, follow the manufacturer's suggestions. In addition to all of the above, there are some other tools and supplies I've found useful. First is a bench mat. This is a dedicated, pliable, cleanable surface on which to perform firearms maintenance. I have an assembly-disassembly mat I got from Brownells many years ago. These mats should not be used for any other purpose and should be wiped clean after each use. This not only preserves the mat, but also reduces the chance of grit or metal fragments being embedded in the mat and scratching the finish of your firearm. If you have any firearms that you have to clean from the muzzle, a bore guide is a good investment. It helps protect the barrel crown from being damaged by the cleaning rod. Since the barrel crown is the last thing the bullet touches when it leaves the barrel, it is generally considered the most important element for accuracy. A good set of properly fitting screwdrivers is a must for disassembling many firearms past the field strip stage. The screwdriver blades or bits should be hollow ground so that they lock into the screw heads instead of damaging them. Punches are another important tool. Plus, if you'll be driving out roll pins, there are special punches specifically made for that purpose. They have a small protrusion at the tip that fits into the end of the roll pin so it doesn't collapse when you drive it out. A small double-headed brass and nylon hammer is a good companion for these. Finally, there are all sorts of picks, hooks, and scrapers that can assist in cleaning and maintaining your firearm. You can often find sets of dental picks for a reasonable price. These make excellent scrapers for getting into small nooks and crannies. Of course, one of the best old-school scrapers is homemade. You simply take an empty brass cartridge casing and hammer the case mouth flat. I currently have several in my kit with different edge contours for removing carbon buildup from different shaped surfaces. In a future segment, I'll talk about the different cleaning procedures. I've asked our hosts to put some links into the items I mentioned in the show notes. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
So, my personal preference is CLP and a boar snake and that blue nylon brush. I love me the blue nylon brush. It understands me. I understand it because I can just scrub as hard as I need to and it won't mar any of the surfaces, but it'll get the crud off like 90% of the time. What do you use, Weird?
I use M-Pro 7 as my cleaner, and I use segmented cleaning rods, and I use the copper brushes or bronze. And and then I use, I've been using CLP, though. Actually, my favorite, though, I haven't been able to find it at my local store, is he says Hoppies. I kind of think David's a little too young to say Hoppies. It's always the old gray beards at the range that say Hoppies. The Hops number 9 high viscosity gun oil. I really like that stuff. But I've been using the I can't remember which brand of CLP it is, but CLP But also, yeah, I'll use also CLP as a cleaner of the, if a gun's not super duper dirty, I'll just spray it down with CLP and be done with it. And since I just accumulate t-shirts like crazy, as soon as one gets like stained or ripped, it immediately goes into a pile in the armory, and I cut my own patches.
Ooh, you have an armory.
Yes, I do. It's also a recording studio. But but that was absolutely what I said when we were buying the house. It's like, all right, where are we going to put the armory?
So you are a 1911 man. Do you have a Wheeler bench block?
I do not.
You don't? Well, no, do you know what one is?
I do know what they are, and I see the point to it. I definitely see the point to it if I was doing a whole lot of tearing them apart. But overall, I generally don't like to detail strip my guns unless I really have to.
I don't even own a 1911, and I have a bench block. How come you don't?
I've always seemed to do well with just a bench with a towel on it.
Huh. That is so odd.
And I got a deep sink. I got a stainless steel 1911. I just throw that sucker in the sink. It's awesome.
And I'm surprised you don't wash it in the dishwasher.
My wife one time caught me when I got my 1911 first. We were living in an apartment that didn't have a deep sink in the basement. And so she caught me. She walked in on me cleaning my 1911 with a toothbrush in the sink. This is back in the early days where I shot exclusively wolf ammo through that thing. And ugh, that stuff's filthy. And yeah, I just get down to the sink and just blast that sucker out with hot water and a toothbrush. And she caught me doing that, and she was not happy.
So when you say a deep sink, I mean, I kind of get what you mean. You know, a utility sink like you would find in a laundry room. But how deep is your deep sink?
About average.
In last week's Weird Audio Fisk, I was unnerved? No. Discomfited, perhaps. Definitely perturbed by the stereotypical gay gentleman berating the Second Amendment in a snotty, highfalutin, catty fashion. But Weird has decided that my punishment is not complete. So today he gives us not just an audio fisk of another anti-gay gunman berating the Second Amendment, this time in musical theater. Oh no! But this is part one of two! Why do you hate me, Weird?
So in this week's Weird Audio Fisk, I'm fisking a YouTube video from early 2018. I think I found this one on my usual fishing expeditions for anti-gun media to fisk. Still, it's from a YouTube channel that has under 1,000 subscribers and has only uploaded 8 videos in the past year. It really wasn't a priority for me to tackle it. But fan of the show Ben posted a rebuttal video from January in the ACP Facebook page, and that rebuttal reminded me that I had the audio for it in my Audio Fisk folder. The rebuttal is very good and linked in the show notes, so go check it out, and I think I can expand on some of their points, as well as bring up a few I think they missed. Let's dive right in.
When you can't make sense of the world today,
ask Mr. Jordan to show you the way.
On the birds and the BS.
And in case you couldn't guess, given that it's a weird audio fisk, Mr. Jordan, who is Jordan Roth, the Silver Spoon son of a billionaire New York real estate developer, and the owner of 5 Broadway theaters, is going to help you make sense of the world today by outright lying. This scripted video starts out with a letter from a fan.
Dear Mr. Jordan, my son is always playing with his gum and spitting it on the floor, so I've made a no gum in the house rule. My daughter says she always uses her gum responsibly, so it's still her right to chew. Should I let my daughter keep her gum?
Hint, hint. The letter, it's a fake.
Let me use an analogy to help with this one. Imagine for a moment that I am surrounded by people who play with their gun.
So really, I just included those last two clips just to show how clever Jordan thinks he is. He comes up with a trite and unimaginative fake letter about chewing gum to bring up his main topic on gun control. Oh, and Jordan, FYI, technically the gum story is the actual analogy. But I see what you did there, and I hope you feel it was clever. Because you're the only one who does.
With these people spitting bullets all over, would my mother still let me keep my gun? Here to answer that question is my favorite mother from live musicals on TV, Anna Gasteyer.
Oh boy. So he's going straight into an appeal to authority fallacy. And the authority is Anna Gasteyer, who was that one on Saturday Night Live. Actually, I really loved her series on skits spoofing an NPR talk show. But making fun of how horrible NPR talk shows are is really kind of in my wheelhouse. But rather than SNL, Jordan says, from live musicals on TV. Ouch! He might as well say C-list celebrity Anna Gasteyer. Oh, but she's also a mother. Which, as we've learned from Moms Demand Action, being a mother is an unimpeachable authority on gun control. So long as you're backed by an authoritarian billionaire man.
If I were using my gun the right way, but others weren't, would you still let me keep mine?
Of course not.
Okay, let's dive right into this garbage. The idea of collective punishment is crap. This goes right along with the answer to the question, when do I take my son or daughter to the range for the first time? Clearly, if you're a parent with guns in the home, you really should teach your children how to safely handle guns. But the age in which to do that is very subjective. If your kid is very mature and solid in following instructions, they could probably go to the range earlier than, say, a more hyper or flaky kid. Trust is earned and proven. What they're saying is we should be treated the same as the lowest common denominator.
But I didn't do anything wrong.
It's a fair point you make. This was not your mistake. I'm a law-abiding son. Why take away my gun? But as a mother in charge of your fun, the acts of another can ruin it for everyone.
Okay, fair warning. The rest of these cuts are done in song. And as you can tell, it isn't good song. Sorry about that. I'm personally not a fan of musical theater, so cutting this segment was a painful process. So she isn't my mother. And by their stupid analogy, neither is the U.S. government. And note how she says, the acts of another can ruin it for everyone. They say can because they aren't going to ban cars or booze when some jerk kills somebody when out drunk driving. Because these authoritarian ivory tower jerks like their wine and their cars. They just want to ban guns. So that is subject to collective punishment.
This is why we can't have nice assault weapons or, you know what, guns of any kind.
Nice little bait and switch going for the slightly more divisive assault weapons. But really, they're after all guns. So I could save time talking about how guns like the AR-15 are super popular guns for both self-defense and recreation, and banning them would be an uphill battle because you're touching the third rail. But they're also going after fair-weather gun owners with their hunting rifles and sporting shotguns as well as muzzleloaders, because those are guns of any kind.
Government says sacrifices sometimes should be made in the name of the greater good.
Well, I can also argue that this isn't a great philosophy either. But in the case of gun control, I don't need to. Gun bans lead to an increase in crime and violence. And in the wake of the repeal of the 1994 assault weapons ban, and all the laws repealed in the rise of gun culture 2.0, we have seen violent crime in the United States fall to record levels. Unless you're in one of those states that has lots of gun control.
Someone tainted Tylenol, they fixed the flaw. There was one shoe bomb, and they changed the law.
So she's talking about the Chicago Tylenol murders, which led drug companies to begin packaging their medications in tamper-resistant packaging. But this was voluntary, not a law. And the shoe bomber was one terrorist with a faulty bomb concealed in his shoe. And that led to more invasive searches by the TSA, which has been proven to be completely incompetent in their job. And none of these events led to the ban on all over-the-counter medications or a ban on all shoes.
And when guns kill kids, that's the final...
Second Amendment.
Ah, that's exactly what they always do. They shoot us down by invoking the Second Amendment.
Note the frustration in her voice. Because all her arguments are moot. It might be easier for the common good, depending on who's judging, if people could be searched without due process, or people could be arrested for saying the wrong things, or the TSA was allowed to continually sexually assault us and search our property under the duress of missing our flights with zero benefits to our safety. Of course, I think none of these things benefit the common good. And thanks to the Bill of Rights, we shouldn't have to debate it with every soft-headed authoritarian who thinks they have a grand solution to our society's woes. Note that Jordan's invoking of the Second Amendment was just playing devil's advocate to lead to this point.
Whoa, that's pretty radical. Most of us are against assault weapons, but even we liberals can't go after the Second Amendment itself.
Why not?
Still devil's advocate. Wait for it.
We're not saying we're coming for your guns.
Actually, now we are.
Wait, really?
Mm.
Yep, they're against the Second Amendment and against all guns. I've covered this point repeatedly. When somebody says they only want common sense gun reform, they are lying. You'll note that the anti-gunners never speak out against gun control laws, that they've gone too far, or will say what kind of guns are perfectly acceptable for lawful use. Hell, they won't even agree what uses of a gun are lawful, because in the end, they won't be happy until they ban all or most of the guns. And then, like British and Australians, when they do get a widespread gun ban, they still call for more gun control. While calling for common sense knife reform, that means carrying a screwdriver or scissors in public will put you in jail. Okay, this has gone on too long, so I'll have to finish up next week. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them. How you doing, Aaron? Are you going to make it?
So I'm going to admit that I am not an aficionado of musical theater, so I cannot describe in great detail just how awful that was. Really, the best I can do is say that listening to that was worse than listening to Vogon poetry.
Well said on episode 42, Aaron. I was going to work a reference in somewhere if you didn't. I've got to say, it is, for those that don't know how the weird audio fisks go down, I've probably listened to that segment at least a half a dozen times in various formats. First, in the whole thing a few times just to get the beats of it, and then cutting it and then listening to the cuts. And I will say, for all of you, it is far more pleasant to listen to it cut with my voice going in and out so it's not going, than listening to the whole song in its entirety. But that was pretty pretentious, and boy, they thought they were being awful clever.
Yes, they did.
Well, thankfully to everyone, part two, even though since I've already recorded it, I do say last week, it'll be 2 weeks' time, so we can all go take a stroll on the beach, go shovel some snow, go do something to clear your mind, and then we'll take on part two.
Oh, freddled Gruntbugly, thy micturations are to me as plurdled gabble blotchets on a lurged bee. Group, I will implore thee, my foonting turling drones, and hoopsiously drangle me with crinkly bindle wordles, or I will rend thee in the gobberworts with my blurgle crunchin'. See if I don't.
Oh, Douglas Adams, we miss you so. In the midst of the polar vortex, one private detective braves the elements to film his target, either being miraculously healed by the cold weather or committing insurance fraud. A snow day is the best day for Tales from the Trunk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Your friendly neighborhood trunk monkey, trying to keep from freezing today. It is Monday, January 28th, and it's the middle of Snowpocalypse 2019, and I've got like 4 inches of snow on the hood of my car, and I'm actually recording activity as we speak. We've got somebody who's being naughty and, you know, claiming a various assortment of injuries, and, well, she spent the better part of the last hour outside shoveling snow. So, you know, in between clearing off my own windshield to try and keep it free of ice and myself from freezing, I'm recording a little bit of video to make things interesting. Today, I've got at least an hour worth of activity already. She only stuck her nose out at about 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard. And we're about 1:45 right now. I'm nice and toasty warm. I have a cup of coffee. I have emergency blankets and emergency kit. I'm probably going to have to rock myself out of this parking space when I finish my day because of the snow buildup here in Detroit and the fact that the street wasn't treated, plowed, shoveled, or anything of the sort when we got snow about 48 hours ago, which included probably about 3 inches worth of accumulation, which drifted 4 or 5 in most places. And of course, with Detroit roads being what they are, it meant travel was actually smooth, if a little bit slippery. So today, it's just kind of a casual day. Finger slams the record button, and it just sits and waits. You know, there's not much else to it, really. Just as an aside, I had to pause the recording there for a minute. The majority of people and other members of the podcast will likely attest to this, and just aware people in general, people have absolutely no clue. I happen to be recording out of my windshield at present with the accessory setting turned on about every 5 minutes or so to make sure my windshield stays clear of snow and ice. It would, of course, be easier to shoot out of my more vertical windows, which prevent accumulation. However, my setup being what it is, I have to shoot with what I've got because I can't afford to move this late in the game. And it also shows that the general public is completely and totally unaware. because I've literally been looking right at this lady for the last hour. There may be 3 or 4 other cars on this street, but I'm the only one that has less snow accumulation than everybody else. And I've been here since about 0600, 0630 this morning, because the original prediction for weather had the snow arriving between 4 and 5 a.m. It was revised after I went to bed and to about 10 a.m. this morning. So Ninja HQ got it about an hour before I did out here on my file. It started there about 9 a.m. We started getting snow here in Detroit about 10:30. And I'd say we're at about 3.5 inches right now, give or take. These are the kind of days I live for. It's where I can just sit and leave the camera on record and make my money. Of course, you know, there's always the risk of freezing to death in a giant icebox or not making it home. However, when I do finish my day later this afternoon, I'm going to take my dear sweet time to drive the 35 miles back to my house. So, as always, guys, stay warm, stay dry, stay ninja. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
I'm rather surprised you didn't go with how the house dick keeps warm in cold weather. and I have to wonder if he's gotten smaller recently.
Oh, man. Like, Steve, for the future, we got to talk about, like, yeah, are you keeping the car idling for this time or all that? And what do you do to keep it running? Because actually, I was talking to a mechanic about idling cars, and he's like, yeah, no, you don't want to keep them idling for too long. It's not good for them. So, yeah, we need to hear more about trunk monkey car maintenance. But I love that we've got our own private gumshoe. And that's just, I like the idea. I was actually surprised on the whole that he was there filming the lady shoveling the snow, because I don't know how you do. Well, I know how you do.
Snow? What's that?
How do you shovel snow in Florida? Easy, I don't. If snow falls, I wait till it melts, which is about a half hour.
It's like you know me.
But I don't know how anybody else in the ACP listenership does it, but when I'm shoveling snow, it generally involves me shoveling, and I just got to stop and take a quick breather and just catch up. And while I'm doing that, I'm just looking around. I mean, one thing I'm looking for is plow trucks that come by. Those things are friggin' big, scary, and dangerous, and they're going to be coming by close to me. So, you know, I want to make sure that I see them coming. But the idea that if somebody's sitting there with a car and the windshield's cleared off and I can see that there's a person inside of it and all that, especially since he was filming out the front windshield, so not the tinted side windows. Yeah, man, I totally would have busted Steve. At least I think I would. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of our podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
You can get more from me at lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com, bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com, blazingsword.org, and pinkpistols.org.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
I'm Blue Nylon, he's Bronze Bristle. Our brushes are assorted, and so's our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.